And welcome in to the Tuesday edition, Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Brandon Bigsby. Joe Rexrode will be along shortly here on the program. We are presented by Green Ventures Landscaping, outdoor patios, landscaping design, lawn maintenance, and more. Visit greenventureslandscaping.com. We are live today from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Hope everybody's off to a wonderful start of their day here today on this Tuesday morning. Joe Rexrode battling through traffic this morning, which apparently is rough on 24. Stop me if you've heard that one before, but he will be along shortly here on the program. We got the YouTube chat up and running. It's flowing. We'll take your participation there. Take your thoughts all show long at 615-737-1025. Our phone number, 615-737-1025. As the YouTube chat points out, it is Cinco de Mayo. Happy Cinco de Mayo out there to everyone. Brandon Bigsby, good morning. How are we doing? What's going on?
Doing good. I completely forgot that today was Cinco de Mayo.
I did too until the YouTube chat just told me. So I'm glad for the reminder on the YouTube chat. But Brandon Bigsby and Ian is out on vacation. Rumor has it, he's out gallivanting around several different golf courses somewhere in the great state of South Carolina. So, having a better time than we are right now. Good stuff for Ian Safar out there. Brandon Bigsby doing an outstanding job yesterday on the program. He's back in here this morning as well. We got a lot going on the show today. Mike Wilson from VolQuest will be with us at 6:30. We'll get into a lot of different things with him. Tennessee on the baseball front, but also the transfer portal in basketball. I tell you, it's going to be an interesting team for Rick Barnes and company next year with how well they're doing in the transfer portal. So we'll get Mike Wilson's thoughts on that a little bit later in the show. We got the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode coming up later in the program at 7:45 as well. It is NHL Draft Lottery Day, so we will break down the Predators' chances to land the number one overall pick in the NHL Draft Lottery. A lot of things going on the program here today, and we'll take your thoughts through all of it. The Stanley Cup playoffs back in action last night, round two continuing on. It was game two between the Hurricanes and the Flyers. Hurricanes win in overtime by a 3-2 score. Taylor Hall, the game winner, which means that Carolina's hadn't lost yet in the playoffs, which is very impressive to this point. So they take a 2-0 lead in that series. Vegas wins last night 3-1 against the Anaheim Ducks. So that was the first game of that series. They're up 1-0 in that one. The Knicks win last night on the NBA side of things. They crushed Philadelphia 137-98, the final score last night, to take the first game of that series. And the Minnesota Timberwolves go on the road and take down the San Antonio Spurs in game one. So some good action last night on the playoff front. More coming up tonight on that front. If you missed the Wild and the Avalanche in game one of the second round in the Stanley Cup playoffs, it was 9-6 the other day. So game two coming up tonight between Minnesota and Colorado. And very interested to see how that part of it goes there. But man, that was a wild first game. I don't know that I've ever can recall seeing a 9-6 game in the playoffs. I mean, it was just wild. And I did not watch, I think I watched the first period of that game the other night and then just went to bed. But good grief, 9-6. Pretty good stuff between the Avalanche and the Wild the other night on that front. So we'll see what happens in the rest of the playoffs tonight. I think, you know, the NBA playoffs actually had a better first round than normal. And they had a couple of game sevens in there. You know, Philadelphia goes on the road, takes down Boston in the game seven. I've been relatively happy with the way the NBA playoffs have gone at this point after a regular season that was nothing but tanking all over the place. The NHL playoffs have been really good at this point. It's almost, if this is a thing, it's almost been like too much overtime, or like there's usually a fair bit of overtime in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It kind of feels like almost every game is going to overtime so far this year. Another one last night between the Hurricanes and the Flyers. It felt like basically every game between Tampa Bay and Montreal went to overtime. So I'm not complaining. It's good stuff. There's a lot of overtime going on in the Stanley Cup playoffs right now. So I have no idea who's going to win the Stanley Cup. I mean, Colorado would be the favorite. I've watched Montreal, like they're really good on the East. Like it's one of those things that you're looking at the bracket right now. I mean, I just mentioned Carolina hadn't lost a game yet so far in the playoffs. So it's pretty wide open in terms of winning the Stanley Cup this year. You know, Minnesota, they gave up 9 to Colorado the other night. I still think that's going to be a pretty good series. I wouldn't be surprised if Minnesota responds tonight on the road. It evens that thing up. Or, you know, I know Colorado's viewed as this juggernaut out there. I think Minnesota matches up decent with them. So I don't think this is going to be like some 5-game thing for Colorado in this series. I think it could go 6 or 7. So I'm excited to see that part of it. Brandon Bigsby, what do you thought of the Stanley Cup playoffs and the NBA playoffs to this point?
You know, I'm kind of with you, Robbie. The NBA playoffs, I've been pleasantly surprised with the amount of Game 7s that we had. And it felt like really the Eastern Conference did a lot of the heavy lifting with some of those closer series. But I think that the more interesting part that I've really been able to kind of dive into, and the NHL is always really good with this because you never really know what's going to happen with the NHL. While with the NBA, you kind of always know going in there's 4 or 5 teams, maybe 6, depending on the year, that are going to be those top contenders.
Yep.
But there have been so many storylines outside of just these teams that we typically would expect. I mean, with the NHL, we haven't even mentioned Buffalo.
Yep.
They come in their first playoff series in nearly 20 years, and they go in and they beat a Boston team who looked really good and was hot coming into the year. In the NBA, you have a team in Detroit who was the number one seed, goes down 3-1 early, is able to come all the way back. Philadelphia upsetting Boston, a hump that they had not been able to get over for over a decade. I mean, just the storylines throughout both the NHL and NBA playoffs have been so plentiful, and I feel like because of the teams that we're seeing doing it, there's a bit more of a refreshing feeling behind it than what we're used to.
It feels like in some ways kind of a changing of the guard. And, you know, Connor McDavid was talking about this the other day after the Edmonton Oilers got taken out in the first round. Like, some of these younger teams in the NHL are starting to get over the hump a little bit. Like Anaheim, they win their first round series, obviously. Buffalo, you just mentioned, gets in the playoffs for the first time since 2011. They win a series. Like, so, and they're not done. We'll see what Buffalo and Montreal looks like. But there's some change going on in the NHL. On the NBA side of things, you know, look, if you force me to guess who's going to win the NBA championship, I'd still go Oklahoma City. That was my pick for the year. They may win like 4 more NBA championships in the next 6 years or something like that. I mean, they're really, really good. J.J. Redick was talking the other day, like, if you go look at the metrics, like the OKC is what they're doing right now. It's one of the greatest teams ever when you really kind of break it down that way. So that's still my guess as to what's going to happen in the NBA. It's going to be OKC going back-to-back. But the first round in the NBA playoffs is usually just a dud, other than maybe like, you know, the 4-5 matchup or maybe the 3-6. It's been pretty good this year. And again, I think they needed that after a regular season that frankly was just awful. I'm an NBA guy. Like, I like the NBA. We've talked about this before. This was the worst regular season that I can remember. And it was, you know, obviously the draft is strong coming up, but there are all these teams tanking all over the place. Like, you looked every night, and it's like, oh, wow, the Celtics are a 25-point favorite against the whoever. I mean, it was too many games that were like that. So it's been good to see the playoffs be pretty good to this point. You know, Minnesota, San Antonio, I'm excited to watch some of that series. I mean, anytime, if you haven't done it, that you can watch Victor Wembanyama, I would recommend it. But, you know, you got Anthony Edwards in that series. Like, it's good stuff in the playoffs so far. And I didn't know what we were going to get on the NBA side of things. So that's been good to see to this point.
Yeah, and I feel like if you're someone maybe that's listening that is a more casual NBA fan and you have a harder time getting into it, right now I think is the perfect time to.
Yep.
Because we had those close first round series, and it kind of reminds me a little bit of March Madness, to where you want to see maybe 1 or 2 upsets, but you don't want to see all of those heavy hitters get knocked out early. So we had some of those 7-game series, but a lot of those teams and those star players that you want to see perform this time of year, the Minnesotas, the LAs, the San Antonios, and then in the Eastern Conference, a team like Detroit, a team like the Knicks, those teams are playing each other. And I think that that's really what you want to see this time of year, but you also have a couple of other teams sprinkled in that maybe you didn't expect, like Minnesota, after losing Anthony Edwards and Dante DiVincenzo for the end of that series, or a team like Philadelphia with Joel Embiid magically coming back in the middle of the series and really being what catapulted them forward to a 3-1 series comeback. You get a mix of that, and you're seeing these star players on these teams play against each other for it all. And I think that that is what really you get invested in. The NBA has always been a star player driven league.
Oh, yeah.
And you're getting a lot of that right now with these series of guys. I mean, you talk about the Knicks and the 76ers, the history between Joel Embiid and Cat. That's a storyline in its own. You have Wembanyama versus Anthony Edwards, like you mentioned. And that is the thing about the NBA playoffs, I think, that is so unique. And it's different from the NHL because the NHL obviously is, you have your stars, but it's a very team-oriented sport. The NBA is a very star-driven sport, and you're seeing these guys go head-to-head, and there's really not a single series that I can think of where you don't have a big name going up against a big name with a lot on the line.
Nope, no doubt about it. Absolutely. We'll have Mike Wilson from VolQuest with us later this hour at 6:30. We will get into a very busy season from Rick Barnes in the transfer portal with him and what that could mean for Tennessee as they head into next season. We got a lot of stuff going on in the program today. Take your thoughts through all of it, 615-737-1025. There was a moment yesterday up in Toronto that was objectively hilarious that in some ways I couldn't believe went down, and in other ways had no problem believing. We will get into that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Brandon Bigsby, Joe Rex Road on the program. How we doing? What's going on?
Doing great. 17 miles in 55 minutes. It's a wonderful morning. Just real fast, first of all, stop moving here. This is unbelievable. Stop it. This is sickening. How are this many people on the road going somewhere, you know, before 6 a.m.? There was a, I assume, a bad accident on 24, so I got off on Hickory Hollow. This is where you get into bad trouble. I could have just saved this for the ramp, but no, I'll tell you real fast. You start following your map, right? They're like, oh, this one's 2 minutes faster. This is two. So, you know, so I'm on Bell, so I'm busting up Bell, and I should have just taken a left on Murfreesboro Pike, right? But instead it's like, no, take like whatever, I forget the name of the road. Up here, this is like 5 minutes faster. So then you start getting up there, and it clogs up. And then it's like, oh, here, try this route. This is now 2 minutes faster. So you, you know, keep. So basically, go up and then do a U-turn and come back and take a right on Murfreesboro Pike, which is impossible because it's so packed. So, you know, you cost yourself probably 5-6 minutes right there. I mean, just terrible. So bad execution on my part, and I hope whoever, whatever happened on 24, people are okay. I mean, I just have to assume, given that, because normally that's moving fine when I get on it in the morning, about 5:15 or so. Other than on the days when we had the pre-show meeting, it starts at 3 a.m. when Izzo and Narduzzi show up. But today, very, very bad on there. So hope everybody's all right.
Izzo left. He was here. He took off before you got here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I saw him at graduation the other day.
Did you?
Yeah. You know, he was. Barry Sanders' kid graduated. Same ceremony. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Nick Sanders.
Did you see Barry?
I didn't. We were looking for him. I was like, yeah, he's probably in one of these suites. You know, unfortunately, we didn't see him.
Would you have? My heroes. You know, you've met countless high level athletes at this point.
Good name.
Would you freak out over Barry Sanders at this point in your life?
No, I actually interviewed Barry Sanders at a training camp in 1998. So there you go. Like, I got in like a question. So no, I would not freak out, but I would definitely give him a hug.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was like, of all the people I've interviewed, the one where I was in the media scrum with him and asked him a question. And then after that, I was like, wow, that was pretty cool. LeBron. I was like, oh, all right. He's enormous. It's crazy.
That's pretty good. I mean, when you're interviewing the GOAT, I mean, that's right. The clear GOAT. Don't want to hear any MJ crap.
Yep. There we go.
There you go.
That's good stuff. So I know you saw this yesterday, but we have to get your thoughts on it. So we mentioned yesterday
that was amazing
that there have been some general manager hires in the National Hockey League, and you know, kind of applied it to this situation here. Of, all right, so when are the Predators going to hire a general manager? Well, one of the teams that's hired a general manager is Toronto. So Toronto, I mean, which basically feels like an annual tradition, they disappoint. They fire somebody, they bring some other people in, somebody leaves via trade, whatever it is. It's like an annual thing with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And it's if you're a hockey fan, and particularly a hockey fan that doesn't like the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's a very entertaining process to watch every year. Usually it involves like some sort of playoff disappointment. This year they didn't even do that. Like, they didn't even get there. So They bring in John Shaika, who used to be with Arizona, who it did not go well with the Arizona Coyotes. And not only did it not go well, like there are a lot of people that were involved in the process there that really, quite frankly, like can't stand the dude. So there's kind of that in the backdrop of all this. When they hired him, it was like, huh, well, that's an interesting hire. Like they didn't hire him and I was like, oh, look, the Predators lost the guy there. I was like, oh, wow. That's what the Toronto Maple Leafs decided to do.
Have at him.
Well, they had an introductory press conference yesterday. And this is one of the questions that went down yesterday from Steve Simmons up there in Toronto at that press conference. Here's what Steve Simmons had to say.
Steve Simmons, Toronto's son for Keith. You talk about the due diligence that you did on John prior to hiring him and now hiring him. In the past, say, 3 to 4 days, I have been in contact with about 20 people who work in the National Hockey League, many of whom are prominent names that we would all know. And of the 20 people I spoke to, one was supportive of John's hiring and the other 19 thought it was a sham, to be perfectly honest. Words were used like con artist, liar, salesman. How did you come to a different conclusion than I was able to come to in a very short time?
I must have talked to different people.
That's it? Because I'm talking the hockey world today is astounded by this announcement.
Okay.
And your response to that?
Is we've conducted due diligence, and it was deep due diligence. It was a thorough process, and I'm quite happy with where we've landed.
So that was the press conference yesterday that has made all of the rounds throughout the hockey world in the last day. It was Keith Pelly who is running things up there for Toronto in this search. Joe, what did you make of that question from Steve Simmons and the response there that is quite interesting up there in Toronto?
Big Steve coming strong. Well, you know.
Hey, Keith, I've talked to 20 people. 19 think this guy's a total bum.
95% of humans think he's a loser. Your thoughts? It's definitely a I can't think of too many exactly like that. I don't have a problem with it. I've seen a lot of criticisms, one of which is like directed to the guy you're calling, you know, people are saying is a loser. But I mean, I think you're asking the guy who made the hire that people are shocked about, you know? I mean, if someone is indeed like a turd and the whole league thinks so, I don't really care. Like, why are you a turd? Are you a turd? You know, it's more like, why did you hire the turd? Yeah. I think it's the right person to direct a question to. I've seen some people say, you know, that's too nasty to, you know, you should have, you know, scaled it back a little bit or whatever, but I'm fine with it.
I enjoyed it.
I mean, maybe just because I like the entertainment value of it, but hey, I mean, it does feel like Simmons is, I mean, that's basically the consensus, is it not? Like, no one would hire that guy. Why would they do that?
People are like,
because he tied Domier tight or whatever. It's like, okay. I don't know, man. I mean, is he accurate when he said the hockey world is astounded by this hire?
I mean, yeah,
pretty close.
Pretty accurate.
Pretty close.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and of course, what I'm seeing also everywhere is like Leafs fans, like, Steve Simmons, I love you.
As Johnny on the YouTube chat points out, he's basically like the PK up there. He's been known to stir it up a little bit.
Yeah. And again, I don't know. It seems like, I mean, I've seen people I respect, like in media, who have gotten very mad at him for things. So it seems like maybe sometimes it's just like a little bit out of bounds. Like, okay, man. We've seen some of this around the NHL, around Colorado here and there a little bit, and Buffalo here and there a little bit. But I don't think this is out of bounds. I mean, it was very bold and very in your face, but I believe him that he talked to these people.
I don't think
he's lying. And he asked a direct question, and I actually like that he followed up with, like, that's it? You know, and again, didn't get much of a quote or comment after that either. But, I mean, okay, so why? Why do you have a different conclusion, dramatically different than everybody else?
Yeah, it was I was laughing because I saw a post from friend of the show, Chris Johnston, who, you know, is big up there and has been on our show a couple times and spends a lot of his time in Toronto covering the Leafs. And he said, one word to sum up that press conference, uncomfortable. And it was hilarious. So I was just like, yep, there you go. I mean, look, yesterday was a reminder to me. I have spoken with some players off the record, so I won't tell you who they are, but off the record that are just like, I don't know why anyone would want to play there. Like, it just, and some people view it totally opposite. Some people look at it and they say they love it to death. If you win, it's going to be great. But there are some players around the NHL that just want nothing to do with any of that crap. And it's such a circus, like, all the time up there. I mean, you had the weird stuff last year with, like, Mitch Marner and people finding his address and harassing him and his family and all. It's like, you know, he leaves and goes to Vegas and they're in the second round. He's playing well and he's just, I don't know. It's a very divisive place up there just in terms of, I think, how players view it.
Why is Toronto like that? But and I know that Montreal's also a fishbowl, but it doesn't seem like it has the same level of vitriol. And they had long stretches too of misery, yeah. And you know,
it does feel different. I think they're somewhat similar just in terms of the scrutiny that goes on, but it just, like, it's been so long for Toronto since they've won anything. I mean, if you're a Canadiens fan, you always fall back on, oh yeah, we got more cups than anybody else. So I mean they went to a Stanley Cup final 2021, and look, they're going to go to another one here at some point pretty soon. They're pretty good. So I just think it's easier if you're a Montreal fan and be like, yeah, we got like 27 cups up here, bud. Let's see that. I think Toronto, it's been since what? Somewhere in the 50s. I can't remember the exact
year. Yeah, it's been an incredible sequence of events and incompetence there.
It's a heck of a press conference, though.
It's like if the Yankees, like speaking of Kurarski, like if he had to go through like decades of the Yankees, like just really failing,
yeah,
and never breaking through.
Yeah.
Man, what a miserable mother farter he would be.
Mike Wilson from VolQuest will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on really an incredible transfer portal haul. From Rick Barnes, get his thoughts on Tennessee baseball as well. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Brandon Bigsby here with you on this Tuesday morning. Talking some Vols. And to help us do that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our buddy Mike Wilson to the program from VolQuest. Mike, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Appreciate you taking time to be on with us.
Is this baby duty time? You got baby duty? Is James, does he want to chime in on the Vols?
James is present. He has a bottle in his mouth, though, so I'm not sure if he's going to be vocal during this segment.
Okay. Well, you never know.
Yeah. His takes are welcome.
His takes are very much welcome here on the show. So, Mike, Juke Harris coming in for Tennessee, adding to what was already a very impressive transfer portal call for Rick Barnes and company. Harris coming in from Wake Forest. How do you kind of put into scope that move for Tennessee and as a whole this transfer class that Rick Barnes and company have put together? What do you think this means for the Vols and how good this team's going to be next year?
I mean, it's obviously a wholesale roster turnover. It's also a seemingly an ideology turnover of saying, I'm going to bring in a whole lot of offense and figure out the rest. Which is a little bit different. It's been more of, here's my holdovers. I'm going to bring in a lightning score of some sort in the portal. But, I mean, this is a drastic difference, right? Just in the volume of scoring they're bringing in. It's about 107 points across the seven transfers. And obviously with Juke Harris joining, that was that last piece. Like, you had a really nice roster up until landing Juke Harris, but Juke Harris gives you that superstar centerpiece, crown jewel, whatever you want to call it, to your transfer portal efforts and really elevates it into a, oh, okay, this is something serious in terms of what they're trying to build for next season.
Yeah, it's interesting because, shoot, I didn't really like last year's team much.
I did not either.
I know you didn't either. And they got to the Elite Eight, right? Like with, you know, basically two scorers and with rim protection and some good defenders and a lot of the same kind of guys you kind of expect. And then basically those guys left, you know, the guys who still have eligibility for the most part. I feel like, well, first of all, am I accurate in looking at them and saying JP Estrella is probably the only guy they lost that they wanted to keep? Would that be accurate?
I don't think that's accurate. I think there was a desire to keep more than that. But I think, you know, the way this goes these days is, you know, the team has a number and a role in mind. The player / agent / family have a role and number in mind. And whether those things line up or not. So I think there were players they probably would have liked to keep, but it just didn't make sense for what Tennessee was looking at.
But they certainly, I guess, they at least offensively have upgraded on some of those guys, right? So the question, so the fit is what's interesting. You can line these guys up and their efficiency and their shooting numbers and their scoring numbers, like, wow, that's a lot of offense. How do you think it fits? Does it make sense to you in terms of how the pieces will fit?
Yeah, I mean, on the perimeter, definitely. The front court is still interesting in terms of the build. I mean, they got a shot blocker, rim runner, and Miles Rubin from Loyola out of the portal. They got kind of a stretch four, but a wingspan guy in Braden Liu from Kennesaw State. So you can see him kind of flexing 4-5. Jalen Harrelson, like the most interesting add, because he's a four. Like, his shooting's not part of his game yet. He's kind of a point forward. So is he going to be your four? Is he going to be more of a wing? So I think they're still going to add there in the post in terms of what they need next. But, yeah, the scoring and the guards they've added all make a lot of sense. I mean, it's a lot of creators. And you referenced it, Joe. Like, there was really only two scorers on the roster last year. And now you've entirely insulated yourself from that, where you have players on the court at all times and coming off the bench who you feel like can go and put the ball in the bucket. And, yeah, I mean, you watched that team last year. Nate Amend's hurt or someone's in foul trouble, you got one scorer for a prolonged period. And, yeah, that's not the case anymore.
Yep, no doubt about that. So, Mike, you mentioned, I mean, it feels like a philosophy shift here from Rick Barnes. So what does that tell you? Like, what does that tell you about Rick Barnes? What does that tell you about, you know, maybe the Tennessee – administration and the effort being put into all this? What do you take away, I guess, on the big picture level for what this all means for this program moving into next year?
Yeah, my understanding was he was not going to lack resources going into this offseason. Like, there was going to be an investment in terms of what he was going to be able to build with the roster, because there is a reality. Like, that roster got to the Elite Eight last year and kind of makes no sense in some ways. I think there, you know, were a couple of matchups there and an injury that helped that cause, but it's a credit to Rick Barnes. And I think part of this shift too is, I think that team last year ranked 14th in adjusted defensive efficiency. And really, I think Rick Barnes can probably look at that and say, okay, I can coach that team into a top 15 defense. Let's go get some natural shooters and I can coach them into a top 20 defense again. At least I assume that's part of the belief at this point, because Lord knows Rick Barnes is not giving up on defense. So
no.
there has to be desire in the back end there to say, I can teach the defense. Let's get some guys who can already score so I don't have to teach them that.
I think what James is saying there is, Dad, you dunked on people on social media who said Juke Harris got $5 million. So can you please tell us how much he did get? / let me add to that, okay, so I just saw another thing. I think it was on Field of 68 where I think it was Sean Miller's, like, I think there's probably 20 to 25 teams that are above 20 mil in their payroll. So is Tennessee, would you say Tennessee is one of them?
From my understanding, I don't think they're there. My understanding going into the offseason was it would be north of 10 million. I assume it's gone well north of 10 at this point. But I don't know that it's crossed into that threshold. That was an interesting comment from Sean Miller, because I think he prefaced it with, like, saying basically, I know this or whatever, or saying, like, educated guess maybe. I thought that comment was interesting.
Mike, on the baseball front, I thought Tennessee maybe had turned everything around, had figured some things out heading into last weekend. Then you dropped 2 of 3 to Kentucky, including on Saturday where you just got walloped 12-2. What do you make of kind of where things stand right now with Tennessee baseball and Josh Elander and company?
Well, that was your mistake, was thinking you knew anything about this team.
I know.
Yeah, it's been shockingly roller coastery throughout the whole season. Obviously, you pound Alabama in that doubleheader sweep before that Kentucky series, and you're like, yeah, okay, this team's turned the corner. The offense is good, like you're saying, and they're going to be fine. And you go up and lose a series to not a good Kentucky team, which is problematic because you've got Texas and Oklahoma as your final two regular season series, and Texas might be, on paper, the most talented team in the country. They're coming to Lindsey Nelson this weekend, so... Yeah, not an ideal situation. You're at 11 SEC wins. Need to get to 13, 14 usually to feel like you're in the tournament. 14 to feel like you're in, 13 to feel like you got a shot. So Tennessee's got a little bit of work to do there, but it's just been a weird season. I think young team to some extent, but it's deep in the year now, so that's kind of not a thing. The bullpen's been a problem. There's not enough dudes, and yeah, it's been a wonky year, that's for sure.
Has this limited the enjoyment of Vanderbilt's season from Tennessee fans? Or is there still a high level of enjoyment?
I think there's just a focus on the Tennessee season. But I did see a projection yesterday, or a couple of them, where LSU, Vandy, and Tennessee all were not in the tournament.
Jeez.
Wow.
It's just kind of wild to try to wrap your head around that those three programs could all be on the outside looking in. I think LSU definitely is. I think Tennessee and Vandy still have a shot there, but... like as it currently stands. So, but yeah, hard to fathom an Omaha without one of those three, let alone a whole NCAA tournament, right?
Yep,
yeah.
No doubt about it. Mike, great
back,
stuff.
Tony.
As always, appreciate you taking time to be with us. You're a man of many talents, and we will talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me and James.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, James.
Absolutely. James, we appreciate it. Mike Wilson, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road from VolQuest, does an outstanding job covering all things Tennessee. Let the record show. I have voluntarily put a college basketball segment coming up next in May.
That's beautiful. That
you should be very proud
thing.
Of me.
I am very proud
so
of you.
So Juke Harris comes to Tennessee yesterday, adding to what was already a pretty darn good transfer portal class. How good are the basketballs going to be with Rick Barnes? What does this say about Tennessee, their investment level? We'll get into all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts at 615-737-1025, our phone number. Appreciate Mike Wilson for being with us in the last segment. Juke Harris added yesterday by Tennessee to what was already a pretty good transfer portal class for Rick Barnes and company. Joe, we've talked about the possibility of this. You know, when all these rumors kind of first started, it was like, hey, are they really gonna land Juke Harris? It kind of seems unlikely. And then they do, and they land Juke Harris, and... as Mike Wilson just laid out, that's heavy investment, heavy priority in the transfer portal for Rick Barnes and company this offseason. So my question to you is, number one, how big a deal in your mind is the Juke Harris acquisition for Tennessee and Rick Barnes? And number two, how good is this team going to be next year? What are we talking about with what they've done in the transfer portal?
Yeah, I still have a little bit of, you know, question mark inside. You know, I mean, I think that's where, because obviously, I think Miles Rubin is a good pickup. If this team with JP Estrella, I'd be really excited. I mean, I think with this team with JP Estrella, with the talent they've added, I would call that a top five team. I still have, you know, a little bit of question there with the interior, but like I'm looking at. Evan Mayakawa, who you know has great college hoops analytics at evanmaya.com, and he puts together these things with, you know, the lineup analysis stuff. So, you know, Data Ames, Jalen Harrison, Juke Harris, Miles Rubin, Terrence Hill Jr., you know, the point guard from VCU, who's a really good player. Evan tweeted, you know, or posted on X. He said, Tennessee's starting lineup next season will probably be the most talented, pure scoring lineup in the entire country. Has the best individual scoring grade of any unit. So, again, that's where, you know, they all can score. They all can create. Like you said, different players. You know, Harrison is a different kind of guy, but I like that kind of guy in there. You know, I mean, look, I thought Jalen Carey would do more this year with Tennessee. I still think that he has, he was critical in the Iowa State win, and yes, he took advantage of Iowa State's best player, the power forward, Joshua Jefferson being out of the game. But I would also like a guy like that on this team. He's on Missouri next year. But just the, they've added, of course, we didn't know at all how good Dalton Knecht was. And you kind of had, you knew that that Chaz was going to be good, and he was. They've had that go-to score with some other guys who could get buckets. This is like a bunch of guys who can get buckets. And it's just going to be really interesting to me to see, you figure their offensive efficiency. I think they've only finished top 25 in offensive efficiency once under Rick, and of course they're like top five in defensive efficiency every single year. You obviously expect to jump in offensive efficiency. Can he take a group like this and, mold them as a coach into a team that looks like Tennessee defensively? If he does, well, I mean, you have to consider them a national championship contender. It's big ifs there, but it's exciting to have this kind of talent. I mean, it's just, there's just a lot of possibilities, flexibility, and just depth of scoring that he hasn't had.
He's not had it, and this is, I mean, they've added guys in the transfer portal, right? I mean, it's not the first time that they've done that. I mean, they brought in Dalton Knecht. It worked out pretty well for him in the transfer portal. So it's not like they've not done this before. I don't know that they've done it to this degree, right? Like, this is a pretty aggressive approach when it comes to kind of the philosophy here in the portal. So what does that signal to you about not only Barnes, but Danny White and Tennessee Athletics and kind of the full picture of the thing here?
Yeah, I mean, it's right there was a key answer, I think, for Mike Wilson. And I was wrong because I've kind of looked at it like, okay, they're fine with these guys leaving maybe. But I think like they would have taken Bishop Boswell back if he didn't. But, the guy, like, he's a good, solid player, but he struggled to shoot, And there's way too often last year, even in that run to the Elite Eight, it's like, man, like they just don't have guys who can make shots. So I think Rick looked at that and said, if we're going to have to do this and go out there, let's do this with offense in mind. I mean, I think, I think it's the right line of thinking from him. And I like the idea, like, we have a system, we coach it. As long as you have guys who, and I think players come to Tennessee and come to Rick Barnes to get better on defense. Dalton Knecht said that when he transferred, he had other options. Said, I want to be a pro. I got to be able to guard people. He still can't all that well, by the way, but that was the idea, of going there and getting better as a defender. So you would assume that would be some of the, of course, it's the money and, your spot in the lineup and all that stuff. But I would think player development and defensive development would be a priority. As long as enough of these guys think that way, then they'll probably have a chance to be pretty good.
I can already tell you, in November, there's going to be like two or three press conferences from Rick Barnes where he's just like, we can't defend anyone.
Yeah.
Like, we just can't do it.
Oh,
they have zero ability to defend anyone. Oh. He's going to get after them early in the year.
Yes. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, you look at like Rick's past as a coach and some of the teams he had at Texas. And, of course, this is a lot of his reputation of, underachieving in March. He had some loaded, pros all over the lineup teams, but not just Kevin Durant, like a lot of really good players. DJ Augustine and a lot of these guys, who could, obviously LaMarcus Aldridge and stuff like that. So, I mean, he's had super talented teams and been able to, be good on defense, but like just really elite, top shelf in the country defense has been his brand at Tennessee, and it does give you a level of consistency. I like this though, man. And, he's going for it. I mean, it's time to get to a Final Four. Three straight Elite Eights is nothing to sneeze at all. That's a big deal. That's 75% of the Elite Eights in the history of the program in the last 3 years. But it's time to take it another step. And I think more scoring firepower makes sense. And obviously if Juke Harris, whatever he's getting paid, if Juke Harris is what they hope, he was a 19-point-a-game scorer at Wake Forest, not a good team. They needed him to score that much. His scoring errors might go down, but if he is the dynamic bucket getter when you just really need a bucket that they hope he is, that's a huge add.
It's a lot of money being spent on things that have nothing to do with football.
Yeah, you're getting uncomfortable over there.
Getting a little uncomfortable. We'll see how it goes. You better go win. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Rex Road has thrown this out there. I don't know where he's going with it, which makes me very excited. The most important question that the Predators have to answer about the personnel history there. We'll get into that.